Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Kerry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hunt.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of the Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand, completely living off of black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have 2 little girls. That means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our black community my life. The black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies. And we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine light on what happened in Tulsa. Most black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring black hair care back. There are great black hair care companies that exist, black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the black community can own the biggest black hair care brands, that the black community can own black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in black neighborhoods, and black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the black hair care products that only black people use, and they are not owned by black people. So I've issued the Black Owned Hair Care Challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black Owned Hair Care Challenge, and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a black-owned company.
Hi, I'm Jossie from Jossie's All Natural. Have you been struggling with keeping your natural hair healthy or desire to achieve substantial hair growth? Then Jossie's All Natural is here to help you. My natural creams, conditioners, lotions, hair mists, balms, shampoos, and detanglers are gentle enough for the whole family and all hair types. Not only do I provide natural hair products, I also give step-by-step techniques to ensure healthy hair in a pure and gentle fashion, from roots to ends. Come on and visit me at www.jossiesallnatural.com. That's JossiesAUNATURALE.com for a true natural hair experience like you've never had before.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air. I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details. You're listening to The Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Dr. Joel Freeman. Now, he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute. Dr. Freeman, I'd like to welcome you to The Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Carrie.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, we've got to start at the beginning. Tell everyone what the Freeman Institute is.
It's a company I started back about 21, 22 years ago, and we have eight arenas of expertise, and that ranges from workshops and retreats and keynote addresses to culture change, reality-based organizational change, and then I do executive success coaching. I do Black History and Diversity Day presentations, and I have a whole aspect that deals with entrepreneurship and business intelligence and creativity, and then do open registration seminar events for communities, and then also develop the Rosetta Stone Replica Project. The Rosetta Stone is not the language software company. It's the actual artifact that was used to crack the code to hieroglyphics back in the early 1800s. And the original is in the British Museum. It was made in Egypt on the west bank of the Nile. They found it in 1799. French soldiers did. But anyway, I have the world's first and only full-size three-dimensional replica that's available for the general public. And also have my own publishing company and other projects we work with. So that kind of gives you pretty much a quick overview of the Institute.
Sure. And tell the folks out there, where is the Institute located? And we'll take it from there in terms of what it's all about.
Sure. It's in Maryland, not far from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And so I want to just let everybody know, as you were kind enough to just kind of give us a quick overview of the Freeman Institute, but when I looked at your website at freemaninstitute.com, I saw quite a bit of information, so many different things that really kind of piqued my interest, and I was just blown away, to be quite frank with you, Dr. Freeman. One of the things that we'll get into, there's so many different aspects, like I said, that we're going to get into, but one of my favorite parts that I uncovered on your site, of course, like some of the, you know, on a lighter side, some of the quotes that you have there are just fantastic. And so, you know, I just wanted to let you know that. I'm someone who gravitates towards quotes and things of that nature. So when I saw it, and I look at your kind of your long list of items that you have on your site, and I see that you cover kind of everything. You really do. And you outline it there. You put it there. It's a lot of work that has gone into this. You have some wonderful things that you're doing, obviously, in the way of education. And you have, you know, just
some great things historical content, reference. And then my other part of this that I absolutely love is that you have a huge collection. So of artifacts and things that that document the African American experience or the African experience, I guess it if you were on some level. So we want you to walk us through just about everything. So and then I'm going to end with the entrepreneurship because that's another part of this that fits into a great deal of where we are today at the Hair Radio Morning Show and what we talk about quite often. So I've got a whole thing on that to kind of cover with you. So let's talk about this particular, before we even get into Annie Malone, which we will definitely get into, let's talk about I think I saw something that you had written, a documentary, if you will, on a white man's journey into through black America, I think it was. Why don't you tell the folks about this and how all this came to be, why this came to be, and how you got involved? Because I understand that you're from Canada, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, what
so
happened is I ended up leaving home when I was 17. I come from a little town of Three Hills, Alberta, Canada. And I left home at 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America, long-haired hippie, dope-smoking fool, and just traveled probably 5,000-6,000 miles on my thumb, pretty much all around North America. And then I had an experience that actually changed my life, that really caused me to revisit, what my purpose was and what my goals were. I signed up for Bible school the next day, and
how old were you, if I may ask, at that point?
I was actually about 17.
Really?
I was 19 years of age. I'm sorry, 19 at that point.
Wow. Okay.
And then I ended up going to school. I became a pastor. I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow.
One of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. And I started that in 1978-79 season. And
so what are the chaplain, for those of us who don't know, obviously we know what a chaplain does in general, but what did chaplain for the NBA do exactly? Like how does all that work?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about it right now called Finding the Open Man, subtitled The Surprising Benefits of Unselfishness. And basically, the whole idea behind being a chaplain is to be a confidant, a friend, someone without any hidden agenda, someone who keeps everything in absolute confidence and is just there for the guys, is not there to take but to give. And it's such a rare situation for so many NBA players because most people have a hidden and sometimes not so hidden agenda. And so sometimes they don't even know for a year to 2 years what their real agenda is for some people that want to get close to them, either through their kids, their wife or family, parents. They try to get through to the player. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. And so I just knew I could love these guys unconditionally, and I could be a listening ear. I didn't always have the right thing to say, perhaps, but I could at least listen. And I think that over 20 seasons, I mean, there are 6 coaching changes, and generally speaking, a new coach brings in his or her new people, depending on the WNBA or NBA or whatever. They just clear the deck and start with their own people. And to have survived 6 coaching changes, I still shake my head. It's remarkable to me that even happened. But it was a great ride. Got to know a lot of players and their families, and that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about.
So you probably I also understand that you used to get a lot of questions from these guys, and that's kind of what also helped to prompt you and kind of push you forward with getting to have a deeper understanding. So, what kind of questions did they pepper you with?
Well, what happened is is, of course, you can imagine, when I was 25 years of age when this happened, and my first year, my first season, and I've always looked rather young, and you can imagine I probably looked about 16 or 17 years of age when I was 25. And so they're looking at each other and saying, "You mean we're supposed to spill our guts to that guy? You got to be kidding me." And so it was earning their respect. But I think that they were testing the seams of my soul and trying to, and the sincerity of my heart by asking questions. And it's probably unconscious. I don't think it was a conscious grilling or anything like that. But over time, they began to ask questions like, you know, what did Jesus look like? What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? Just questions like that that I found that I did not have the responses to. Heck, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And so what happened is that little by little, it forced me to start researching so that I could have some type of a credible response to them. Then you fast forward. That was my first inkling, real inkling, that I needed to grow and expand. I never was interested in history in school, but that got me started. Then you fast forward to about 1995, I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin. He was the senior HR manager for a company, and by that time in 93, I had stopped pastoring and decided to take my pastor's heart into the business world. So I launched my own company called the Freeman Institute. And at that point, I was at his job, you know, working, doing some events for his senior leadership team. And between sessions, Don began to share with me his journey as an African-American male, growing up, and some of the latest revelations and understandings he had about himself and about history. And it fascinated me. So I began to study some of the things that he was saying, began to research. I had that much respect for him. And I remember going to the library time and time again. There's no internet at the time. And I just would get these, what we used to call VHSs or videos.
Right, remember those.
And so I'd bring home a video, let's say, a series called Africa, A Voyage of Discovery by Basil Davidson. It was a BBC series. A man from Great Britain, and then I'd pick up the Eyes on the Prize, Part 1, Part 2, The Promised Land, about the move from the South to the, especially the Chicagoland area, and I just began to read books, and then I bumped into Ivan Van Sertima, and I remember calling him up. Someone gave me his home phone number. I called him up, and I said, you don't know me, and I barely know you, but I would like to get to know you. And what happened is that he began to share things with me, and then he got my address. The next thing I knew, 3 weeks later, I got a big, huge box of his books that he edited and wrote. And then I called him back and asked him if he would become my historical guide, my main historical guide. And we spent hours on the phone together where I'd read a book, and I'd redline it. I'd ask all kinds of questions. And he let me ask any off-the-wall question that was ricocheting around my little pea brain. It was just a fascinating experience.
Wow.
We had a great time talking. He's passed away now since 2009. And I miss him, you know, on many levels, but especially just hanging out with him on the phone, just talking with him about various things, bouncing ideas around. So that kind of was the genesis to, and then I met a gentleman by the name of Mark Mitchell, who has a huge Black History collection, and Mark and I began to talk, and I just saw the power of his collection, the impact it had. It is a transcendent quality, transcending race and gender and generation and religion, class. I mean, just fascinating. And so I began to, he became a mentor of mine, and I began to develop my own collection, which is now well over 3,000 pieces. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. I've been able to do exhibits at the United Nations twice, And plus, they've used some of my pieces and information on international exhibit that's going around the world right now. Clinton Presidential Library have done things in conjunction with the White House communication staff. Also, Secret Service 4 years in a row, FBI. Just fascinating stuff that
wow.
has emerged as a result of this collection. It's opened up doors. And I find that especially when I'm speaking about diversity or black history, it opens up the minds and hearts to receive what I have to share, because when people see 20, 30, 40 pieces of my collection and exhibit before I speak, you know, now they're intrigued. What's this? What's this white guy all about? What's his deal? You know, what's motivating him? And that's the cartoon bubble above everybody's head. And so I'm able to respond best I can to that. In fact, I have a website called whitemansstory.com. That white man's, no apostrophe on the S, man's, but whitemansstory.com. And that's my online response to that question that people have about, you know, what motivated me to get involved.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about this amazing collection that everybody is talking about, of course, that you indicated, you know, over 3,000 pieces. I think I saw in your video or somewhere where it even had, like, the shackles, if you will, for, like, that some of the slaves may have, you know, worn or what have you. In addition to so many other different things, what are some of the other standout items that are included in the collection? And I understand that it is online to some degree.
Yes, blackhistorycollection.com gives kind of a brief overview of some of the pieces, but it's blackhistorycollection.com, singular. And, you know, that one pair of shackles that I received, I was over in Ghana at the Slave Coast Castle, and I was talking with a gentleman there. His name was Stephen Donica, and I began to share with him a little bit about, you know, the film that I had co-created with Don Griffin and the book and some other things in my collection. And then I said, how would it be possible for me to get a pair of shackles, a set of shackles from here, from Africa? And he says, I don't know, but I'll find out. He brought everything before the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set to me, which he sent to me. And I just blown away that they were that kind, and because I'm sure it's not an unlimited number of shackles they have available, and for them to do that, I just feel so respected by the individuals who voted on this, and of course also Stephen Danica. And so the other pieces, I've tried to do, Carrie, is to develop kind of a more of a global picture, because I find that here in America and in some parts of Canada also, there's this intractable black-white situation where it's very hard to understand, to cross that no man's land, or so to speak, between the two races. And so I tried to bring more of an international view, and because I really think that once people begin to realize that there were things going on in South America. In fact, there's well over 3 million that right now that speak Spanish and Portuguese, people of African descent in South Africa, and many people can't imagine that and cannot understand it. But it just is. I have documents going back to 1553 from Peru, from Ecuador, from Argentina. Some of them are written in Old Spanish, so that even if someone knows Spanish today, they cannot even read these other documents. You have to have a specialized understanding about the Old Spanish script. And these are all slave documents. I've got an 11-page document from a hospital where slaves were, if they got sick, that's where they went, St. Bartholomew, just outside of Lima, Peru. And it's just an astonishing thing. And then also I have, what I've tried to do with the collection is I've not tried not to spend so much time documenting the horrific nature of the slave trade and all the rest of it, even though that's a part of the picture and is a necessary part of the picture. What I've tried to do is to showcase the inventiveness of it and the creativity of people who are have been under the boot of slavery and the trade, and you know,
and what have you found
Jim Crow
for the most
laws.
Part, right?
Well, what I've discovered is I developed a metaphor that is not new, but I've applied it to this situation. It's called Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. I commissioned a 90-second animated video that people can see on YouTube, Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle, and it. What it basically is the concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, ranging from lynching, the black code laws, and just the depression where blacks were hired last and fired first, and just so many issues that are, it's impossible to exaggerate the horrific nature that what people endured. But then we talk about the blades of grass who came up through, cracked through, and sometimes exploded through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. So by using this metaphor, it gives permission to talk about the horrific nature without it being a downer. Because then, as I mentioned, the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. Once we begin to understand how terrible it was, and then we see the accomplishments of individuals in spite of how terrible it was, my goodness, I say, you know, man, I think I've got problems. You know, I mean, here's an example of somebody who had everything stacked against them, and they still made something of their lives and an inspiration to their families. I mean, we all have concrete internally. Stuff like, you know, hey, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I can't make it, I'm a fraud, you know, if people really knew what I was all about. That's the stuff that echoes in the minds and the hearts of just about every human being. And at one point or another, that can actually rob them of their purpose and their potential.
Right.
And so that we all have that internal concrete. I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too tall, I'm too this, I'm too that. My ears are too big. My ears are too small. My hair is not enough. You know, all that kind of stuff that gurgles around. But then you add to it the systemic issues in a culture that provide external concrete that actually can become so terrible and so demanding of a person's attention that it can actually cripple them and come rolling over them and just say, well, I guess I'm nothing. I might as well commit suicide. I might as well do something harmful to myself so that I sabotage my own success. But here are people that came up through it in spite of it. And that, to me, is I just shake my head. And every time I see pieces from Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker and Frederick Douglass and Toussaint Louverture and other individuals, Marcus Garvey, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of individuals, Pearl Bailey. It just is astonishing to me what these individuals accomplished. And so what I've tried to do is develop a touchstone, if you will. For instance, like Pearl Bailey, I have the actual check that she was paid for her part in Porgy and Bess. And someone, I'm not going to tell you how much it was, because someone might say, how much was that? I'm going to say you have to go to blackhistorycollection.com and do a search for Pearl Bailey, and you'll find out how much she was paid for her part in the movie that came out in the early 50s. And so it just is amazing when you think of what people like her accomplished. I have Ethel Waters, her contract, her book, His Eyes on the Sparrow. It was a smash bestseller. And I have the actual contract signed by her and her co-author, the one who, the ghostwriter, not the ghostwriter, because he was declared that he wrote the book, but co-author with her, Charles Samuels. And I have other items in here.
Well, Dr. Freeman, was it hard to kind of gather these items? How do you find these items? I mean, is it easier nowadays because of the Internet, I guess I should ask?
It's actually very difficult. If someone were to embark upon a collection like this
right now...
Right,
if I were to start a collection today, I don't think I would be able to do it.
Be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding. It is. Wow. I know what's out there and what's not out there, and it is the stuff that you get now, just reproductions, and there's a lot of fakes, and it's very hard. For instance, I have an original letter, handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. It's almost priceless because where could you find one? You know, someone might say, "Well, I've got everything." No, you don't. You don't have a handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. You know?
No, that's huge.
Someone like an Oprah or you know, you name the names out there of individuals that would be interested. I mean, if they went out to look for it, they couldn't find some items that I've been able to bring together.
Wow. Well, I have to say, let me just remind everybody and kind of bring everybody up to where we are. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, today's guest is Dr. Joel Freeman, and he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute in Maryland. And we've been kind of following along and just thoroughly impressed with the amount of information that you have. You are truly a historian in every sense of the word, and an entrepreneur, and you just cover everything, really. I don't think I've seen anybody in a long time like this who we're all blown away with this kind of information, this knowledge, and the willingness that you share, putting it out there, and it's quite remarkable. So I'm going to kind of turn to, I do want to talk a little bit about Annie Malone and some of the other folks that you write about. And I know we kind of glossed over the book a bit that you wrote with the gentleman, Don Griffin, I believe.
Don Griffin, yes.
So I want you to talk about the book specifically. Tell the folks a little bit more. Are we able to get a copy of this book?
Yes, it can be gotten online on Amazon or anywhere else. And or they can contact me after the program or something like that, and I'd be happy to sign a copy for them and send it to them.
Sure. It's called The Return to Glory. I just want to make sure that that's clear, Return to Glory.
Subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And the first half is all about the historical content, and that's the half that Don wrote. The second half has to do with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap to wholeness. And in that last part, I detail how a person can walk through the grieving process. Because I remember when I was interviewing people for the book, especially because the book is targeting especially young men, ages about 12 to about 27. And while we were researching this, we had people tell us, "You're crazy. You know, why would you want to write a book? Because if you want to hide something from young African-American men, you just put it in a book, right?" That's what they're telling us. And they said, you're wasting your time. You got to use more visual, music, whatever, other means and methodologies to reach your target audience. But we kept on going with it, and I'll tell you.
Which is a horrible stereotype all in it, you know, unto itself.
It is, absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was the messaging message we were getting from people we were interviewing for the book.
Right.
So anyway, what happened is the second half deals with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap. And so what I did is, you can imagine on a suspicion scale from somewhat to extremely suspicious, we're banging on the extremely suspicious end of the scale when I'm interviewing someone, let's say, for the book. And they're saying, you know, why are you writing this book, and who are you, and what are you all about? And so what I did is I asked a question that changed the tone of every single interview. And brought some of us from 45 minutes to sometimes 4, 6, maybe even 8 hours. Some dear friendships emerging. And here's the question that changed the tone of every single interview. Do you remember the moment when you realized that because of the color of your skin, that the rules were somehow different for you? Now, by asking that question, to have a 65-year-old man pause, look out the window, and then look back at me, and then tell me with brilliant clarity what happened when he was 5 or 6 years of age. Knowing what the, remembering the weather, what he was wearing, his mother's response when he told her about it, and just, my goodness, that question changed the tone. Because I began to then see that there was a whole grieving process. After that moment, whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 19 or 20 years of age, depending on the situation, to then go from that moment to what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote when she was still alive. She wrote a book about the grieving process. And grieving, we've all lost loved ones or lost a dream, but grieving is all about loss. And so the loss that I began to identify, because my PhD work is in psychology, and I think in that direction, began to see that the loss had to do with, it was the loss of innocence. That all of a sudden a young kid, a young boy, young girl, a young individual, suddenly has, it's like the scales have been taken off. It's like the blinders have been taken off, and they now can see, wow, they hate me just because of the color of my skin? You got to be kidding me. And then the grieving process, ranging from denial to depression to just all the different aspects that go with the whole grieving process. And in the book, I spend a chapter on each layer, each aspect of the grieving process. And of course, it isn't a neat, nice and tidy, while I'm moving from one part to the next, never to be revisited, but a person could be in whatever acceptance means, you know, because who knows what that means. A person could be in acceptance at 4:30 in the afternoon and be back at square one at 7 o'clock that night and working through the whole process again. So that began to really unlock to me the doorway, the gateway to understanding what humans go through in a situation like this. And it had an astonishing impact on me.
Well, you know something, Dr. Freeman, I have to ask you, and I think this is about as good a time as any. When you see all of the things that are happening in the country in these current times, and you being a person of faith and education and all the above, and what can you say, and how do you explain it? What are your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that humans are humans wherever we go.
Uh-huh.
In other words, if you're a Korean in Japan, you're going to be experiencing some crazy situations. If you are a let's say a gypsy in Hungary or in Sweden, you're going to be experiencing situations that are very, very difficult. And if you're from one tribal system or another tribal system, warring against another tribal system in Africa, very similar dynamics. Same color of skin in all in these accounts, except Korean and Japanese might have just a variation of the color of skin. But and also in Mexico, if you're darker skin or lighter skin color, the darker skinned individuals deal with incredible discrimination. In Italy, if you're from North Italy versus South Italy, in Great Britain, just the sound of your speech, if you're from Yorkshire or Scotland, and you're talking with someone who's from London, you know, from a certain part of London, there's immediate, the moment the person opens their mouth, there's an immediate class system that emerges. My point being is that for me, I think that wherever we go, there's going to be this kind of situation. And I think it's important for us to understand the history so that we never repeat it, you know, personally. Let me tell you a quick story. I was down at Los Alamos National Laboratory some years back, about 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago now. And I was speaking at their Martin Luther King event. And I talked about the moment. And I talked about the grieving process. And there was a gentleman there who was very high up at Los Alamos National Laboratory at the time, a man of African descent. He came up to me afterwards and began to share with me his story a little bit. And then after he shared with me his story, he said, you know, he says, when I experienced the moment when I realized because of the color of my skin that the rules were somehow different for me, he said, it was like a hurricane force wind came against me. He was no more than about 6-7 years of age. And he said, in fact, by the way, when you think about a hurricane, it takes about, 75 miles per hour for a wind to get a name. And he said that what happened is that I learned as a young man how to lean into the wind. I learned how to have a sense of humor in the midst of the wind. I learned, it was a dark sense of humor, but I had a sense of humor.
Right.
I learned how to be successful in spite of the wind. I learned how to have relationships with people in spite of the wind, but I knew the wind was there. And he says later on, he says, I rose very pretty high in the ranks. I got a job in Japan. He said, I went to Japan and got a tour there. And he said, the moment I got off the airplane, he says, wouldn't you know it, the wind stopped. And remember what I said about the Korean and Japanese. If you're Korean, the wind is at about 120 miles per hour for you. But as a man of African descent, he said the wind has stopped for him. About 3-4 weeks later, there were a delegation from D.C. came to visit. And he said they met at a restaurant. And he said within the first 5 minutes, he said, at the restaurant, he says, I felt the wind pick up again. It was just crazy and strange. Then he looked at me. He's a no BS kind of guy. He looked at me straight in the eye, and as serious as a heart attack, he said, for some reason, I don't feel any wind coming from you. Now, Carrie, I don't know. It just struck me so incredibly hard what he said to me. And I thought I got in the car. I mean, we're I had to get to Albuquerque to get on the plane to come back to Baltimore. A couple of times I had to pull over because I was crying so much, because it meant so much to me. And I just, at that point, you know, I began to pray. I began to talk to God. I said, I never want to be a person who sponsors the wind for my wife, for my kids, for my next-door neighbors, people at church, people wherever I go, and be in cross-cultural situations. I don't want to be a sponsor of the wind. And not if, but when I do sponsor the wind, I just want to be man enough to go to that person, whoever it might be, and ask for forgiveness and apologize and repair as best as I can. Now, I think that is a metaphor, if you will, for how things can change. It's one by one, people reaching out and in spite of the pain. Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think that's what it's all about, that in the midst, in spite of our wounds, in spite of the history, that we all seek to understand before seeking to be understood. That's what Augustine said in the 4th century.
Wow.
Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. Those are words worth embroidering. But
I love
what's cool about that statement is that it doesn't preclude the need to be understood, but it's all about understanding. And I think if every one of us, within the sound of my voice, myself included, if every one of us over the next 30 days said, I am going to seek to understand before seeking to be understood with our spouses, with our kids, with our next-door neighbors, everybody,
mm-hmm.
and just I think it could have a profound impact on the quality of our lives, on our experiences, and the impact on our work experience, everything that we can imagine. So that's what I think it needs to happen. And so every pore in my, every bone, every tissue in my body, every cell in my body, I want to be committed to that. I want to be committed to impacting other people, like the hot coal principle. The old days, we had the hibachi grill, and you put
right.
the briquettes in there.
All right, it's Friday morning, January 7th, 2022. This is a live hair radio update. I'm Kerry Hines. We'll get you right back to the ongoing conversation with Dr. Joel A. Freeman in just a bit. Wanted to check in with you guys. It's a little snowy as we broadcast live on this this Friday morning. It's our show number 652, show number 652. And we're here until 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. Again, it's the year, New Year, 2022. First, want to just make sure you guys are aware. Coming up in just a bit, we have a couple of live guests joining us. We're expecting Harlem Will Mitchell, as well as Jossie from Au Naturel. We'll see what works out here in New York City. As you guys know, we're in the midst of our very first snowstorm this year. So listen, we'll get you back to the wonderful, wonderful Dr. Joel A. Freeman. And remember that in February, we'll be covering wonderful black Black history in America and beyond. So we're looking forward to it with his book that he has out there, a very amazing book called Black History 365. So we'll be talking a little bit more. So just stay tuned and enjoy the rest of today's show. We'll be right back.
Not a backward step. It's a forward step because now we're ready to confront the issues in our lives, to deal with people out of respect, mutual respect. Not me trying to be black or someone else trying to be white. It's just saying, hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to diss my own people. I'm not going to tear my own race down. I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm going to allow you to be who you are when you come in that 5-foot zone around me. And so that's what it's all about, I think.
Wow. Well, I think you put it eloquently, I have to say. Let's talk about just turning a little bit over towards the entrepreneurial part of things. And I love how you really, I have to say, I read a little bit closely about some of the items in terms of you helping corporations and helping folks in terms of diversity and all kinds of different things and customer service and just teaching and being there to help guide folks. I was just quite impressed with all of that, Dr. Freeman. So I want to kind of just talk for a moment, and maybe we need to start off by recognizing the impact of an Annie Malone, of C.J. Walker, and then kind of talk about entrepreneurship in just in general terms. And then I have something I want to mention to you, but why don't we start there? Why is it so important, and it seems like all these things are connected when I think about, the Freeman Institute. It seems like all of these things that you do, there is a theme, there is a purpose for all of these different aspects that you tackle. You do a lot, and you say a lot, and there's a reason, I believe. But I'd like for you to talk to that a little bit. You know, about the entrepreneurship and Annie Malone and all of that. Why did you decide to include Annie Malone as part of your wonderful site and information?
Well, Kerry, you are right. There's no more than 2 degrees of separation between any two things that I'm involved
mm-hmm.
with. In fact, what I did is I think it's important for everyone to do this. But I figured every major corporation or organization, faith-based, nonprofit, for-profit, whatever, most every successful organization has a vision statement, mission statement, core values, code of conduct.
Right.
And I figure why not everybody else? Why not individuals develop that? And so what I've done is I developed my own vision statement, my own mission statement, my own core values, and I detail that in the workbook called "If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand." It's a book about entrepreneurship, about taking an idea to the marketplace. It's a book about discerning the difference between a viable business dream and a nightmare as quickly as possible. And it's also developed so that an organization could create an entrepreneur club, so that people can learn how to deal with objections and learn how to deal with rejection. Because if people can deal with those two things, especially learning it young in life, they can be successful in whatever they do, objections and rejection. And so I think that when it comes to entrepreneurship, see, one of the things that I want to do is help community-based organizations and faith-based organizations establish galleries, black history galleries in a community. And I think that a gallery can become, in fact, if someone goes to blackhistorygallery.com, blackhistorygallery.com, they can learn more about this model. Because I think the Black History Gallery can become like a town well for a community where people can learn about morals and values and just entrepreneurship and so many different aspects of what it means to return to glory. And so then what happens is that as a person learns about entrepreneurship, in fact, I think especially with, let's say, an organization wanting to mentor youth, you know, if you come at a young person with the whole idea of morals and values, they're going to be gone in New York second. But if you come at them with the idea of how can we connect now with later, you know, what do you do? What do you want to? Where do you want to be down the road 5-10 years from now? And what are you doing now that will connect with 5-10 years from now? And you know, if what you're doing now doesn't connect with 5-10 years from now, then we need to revisit what you're doing now, and we can do that in a very positive way, and begin to understand that the future is a connection of the eternal now, you know, the moment, these moments that we connect together that become the future. And so I think it's important to bring a group of young people together, let's say, and say let's have an entrepreneur club. And by the way, let's develop an entrepreneurial business together. And I developed a whole magazine project around that that's going crazy around the country right now. And let's develop a project so that you can learn how to deal with objections and rejection. And then you can learn how to shake a hand firmly while you're looking squarely in someone's eyes. You can learn how to dress in a way, in a manner that's going to be one less speed bump for someone to go over to get to you as a person. We're going to learn how to just the way we communicate, what we say, how we say it, when we say it, time, tone, tact. We're going to look at all these different aspects. We'll look at your values, your morals, your character. But you see, all this stuff gets slipped in through the side door. And it's along the way, all this stuff becomes introduced because, you know, if you want to be successful, if you want to make more money, if you want to be a person that has a greater purpose in life and attracts people to you, your counsel is in demand, you have to start looking at these other areas. But if you lead with that foot, the other area foot, it's going to drive them away. But if you lead with the foot, you know, of success and entrepreneurship, because we're all either going to be an employer or an employee. And I prefer to train up employers, people with an entrepreneurial mindset that can end up hiring 100, 1,000, 10,000 people down the road.
Exactly.
And provide jobs for families. And that's the kind of mindset I like to prepare people for, and so that they're almost not content for anything else but that.
Exactly. Well, I love that. I really do. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of which, I see that you have the video there. I didn't get a chance to discover that before we began to chat today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the Madam C.J. Walker items that you have. And I believe they're part of your collection. Or tell us a little bit about that and how did you, you know, we'll turn to the hair part of it.
Okay.
How did you get that and talk a little bit about that? And I'm looking at your video, but I don't have the sound up. So, you know, walk me through a little bit of what all of that is about.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching. She went to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet, the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from? Who,
right.
What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99% of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone,
exactly.
About the manager Jay Walker, but then you might
right.
have three
and
or
no
four
one.
People
right, exactly.
saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Correct.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
Because she
no,
was...
Hold it. Yes, go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was...
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually, she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks. I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to parocollege.com. And Paro College, it's just very simple. The word, first word is four letters. Paro, P as in Paul, O as in ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in ocean, Paro, like P-O-R-O, college.com. And they'll see this building, and then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, yeah, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street, New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years of service. Her philanthropy toward them and toward others was legendary. This building is just an incredible place that she created for this. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. She paid, imagine this, 1926 alone, she paid over $40,000 in taxes. Just think about that.
Amazing.
One of the first
Amazing.
People in the entire state of Missouri to own a Rolls Royce. And,
so who was actually the very first self-made female African-American millionaire? Was Annie Malone, or was it, I mean, not that it, you know, is something we should, you know, compare on any level, but I'm just curious because I've always grown up thinking it was Madam C.J. Walker with all of her, you know, things and accomplishments.
Yeah, from all the research I've done, if I were a betting man, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I were, I'd bet the farm that Annie Malone was the first millionairess of African descent, female millionaires in the country.
And that's
just
what I'm getting.
Timing.
Why? How on this earth? I try to figure this out as well. How did? And I love Madam. I love both. And
oh,
all
no,
the things
there's
that they
no
stand for.
They both are wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's
but
not even part of the discussion here.
Right. Exactly. But how on this earth did Madam C.J. Walker take all the things that she learned, which I'm sure was a wonderful tribute to Annie Malone, and seems that only America, it seems like we only remember or know of the accomplishments of the student as opposed to the teacher.
I think a lot of it had to do with Annie Malone. What happened is that she ended up getting married in, I think it was 1924-ish, right around there. And what happened is that after she got married, her husband, he was not a very good man. And he caused such incredible problems for her that I just shake my head. And felt that he was due so much more than and they ended up getting divorced, let me put it that way.
Wow.
And from that point on, what happened is her business became she was a very, if you look at her building and everything that she did, it was incredible, impeccable, clean. It was orderly. It was, you could see the record system she had. My point being is that this was an incredible person. But once, after the wedding, then what happened is that he began to sabotage everything. And she never recovered. Then the IRS got involved, and she never recovered from that at all. Here's a college that employed, in 1926, 175 people with franchise outlets in North America, South America, Africa, the Philippines, a wealthy, wealthy woman. And then at the end of her life, she pretty much dies destitute. And all that's left right now is the orphanage, the Annie Malone Orphanage, that was a facility on Good Avenue. I don't know if you remember the song Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
Yes,
he
of course.
He grew up on Good Avenue, right around the corner. And that's where the spelling Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D-E, in the song, it comes from that Good Avenue.
All the time, I thought it was just Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D. So
yeah. G-O-O-D-E. If you look it up on the internet, you'll see that's how it's spelled.
Wow.
And he later became a beautician under the Poro system. He graduated in 1952 because he thought the music thing wasn't going to work, and so he became a beautician. And of course, his songs just took off, and he never went back to it. But
right, amazing. So, okay, well, that explains a great deal for us on that, because I was just curious. I'm really sad to understand that she had that kind of a ending. But you know what? I always like to remind folks, and it always seems to me that it's always those who are incredibly talented and creative, and they always attract a certain kind of the opposite, if you will. I don't know. It just seems very strange to me. But anyway,
some people make great personal choices and bad business choices, and other people make bad business choices.
It's the opposite, exactly.
Good personal choices.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Exactly. Well, listen, thank you so much. This is great. Folks, if you've just joined us, we have really been kind of getting a great education, a great understanding of so many historical elements and things that we kind of knew a little bit about, or we kind of heard about, and some of us have read some things, but not others. So we're so excited to have the gentleman behind the Freeman Institute. He is the founder, CEO, and president, Dr. Joel Freeman, and he's with us today. And this is just, I'm still kind of stuck on the 3,000, more than 3,000 pieces that you have in the Black History Collection. I can't wait to come and see that. So I'm very, very excited.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited
about it. Sure. So this is just wonderful. And we're going to tell the folks again, why don't you do that, Dr. Freeman? Tell the folks how they can reach you, how they can find out the items that they really need to focus on some of these. I mean, you have quite a bit of information.
Well, I think if people can go to blackhistorycollection.com, and then at the very bottom of the page is all of my contact information. And so then I'd be very happy to talk with them if they want to order a book, a film version of the book, Return to Glory, the entrepreneurship book, anything at all, or just want to talk maybe about something in there that they have a collection or a few pieces and they're wondering about it. I'd be very happy to talk with people. And so that's probably the best way, blackhistorycollection.com.
We're going to, of course, stay on top of all of this and bring you back, Dr. Freeman. We're going to keep, we've got you now. And there is a whole lot of this that we're going to delve into on a regular basis because this is something that's so critical and important for us to have a greater understanding about. And I feel so honored and lucky right now. I feel so lucky that I've been able to come across your information.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at ChairWatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
Hi, I'm Jossie from Jossie's All Natural. Have you been struggling with keeping your natural hair healthy or desire to achieve substantial hair growth? Then Jossie's All Natural is here to help you. My natural creams, conditioners, lotions, hair mists, balms, shampoos, and detanglers are gentle enough for the whole family and all hair types. Not only do I provide natural hair products, I also give step-by-step techniques to ensure healthy hair in a pure and gentle fashion from roots to ends. Come on to visit me at www.jossiesallnatural.com. That's JossiesAllNatural.com for a true natural hair experience like you've never had before.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Treat, and I'm shouting out this Hair Radio Show with Terry
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Sway's Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It's Friday morning, January 7th of 2022. It's our show number 652. Let me let that sink in for a moment. Show number 652, as we march towards our show number 700 of this broadcast. And today is a very, very special broadcast for us as we are first going to bring to the line a lady who's just, she's kind of recently joined us, but she's made a significant impact with talk on taking care of your hair, particularly during the winter months. It is my great honor to welcome to the airwaves for the very last time, at least for the foreseeable future. She'll be back one day. But it's, again, a great honor. She's done such a great job holding it down here. Jossie of All Natural, good morning and happy Friday.
Good morning. Yes, happy Friday. Good morning, everybody.
Yes, it's great to have you with us. Just like I said with the introduction, this is a big shock. We're so, you know, we're going to miss you here at the broadcast. It's been a great pleasure over the last few months having you with us.
It has. I really appreciate the opportunity that I did have to do this. It's been an honor.
You know what, and Jossie, I really want you to take a moment to share with us what you thought of your experience here on the Hair Radio Morning Show broadcast. There are lots of folks out there in the hair business, and some are looking to, you know, embark upon this as a career. What would you tell them? Were there some hard part? What was the hardest part about working with Carrie Hines in the morning on the airwaves? Was it any part of it that was a challenge?
I think the most challenging part for me was, after getting over the whole hump of actually doing it, that was, you know, scary at first.
See, I remember your first words and things that you uttered on the airwaves. I really do. That was the hardest part, right, taking that first step.
Yes, that was probably the hardest. And then the second hardest was just keeping up with, you know, the pace, keeping up with knowing what to say, you know, what to talk about, how to answer, how to word things. I feel like that was a little bit of a challenge because I had to make sure I, you know, was saying the right thing and that I was not just getting on here repeating myself over and over and over again. I don't see how you do it every day for 3 hours.
And for 652 shows.
Yes, that's a lot of things to talk about.
That's a lot of things to talk about. Well, you know what? It's I don't know how to even word it. I'm rarely at a loss for words, so this is a very good little mark in your book. But I'll tell you, I think what it has been is that there's such a passion and a connection that we have with our fans, and they have, like, you know, like you. You have folks who contact you through social media to ask you questions on hair care. And it's kind of the same thing on this end, where all these years I get the feedback from folks, from fans who listen overseas. I have Kobina Ebenezer over in Ghana, in Accra, and he has been instrumental in helping us get something launched over in Ghana, where there are folks there who are aware of the Hair Radio Morning Show. They're listening in Nigeria. They're listening in Egypt. They're listening in South Africa. They're listening in Europe. You know, they're listening in South America. They're listening in Australia. And I've gotten to know a lot of these folks by their names. You know, so some have been on our show. Well, absolutely. They've been right here on our broadcast. So I'm super excited. And so this means a lot. Don't ever think that it is in vain. We have an amazing platform. I created this platform for us in the hair and beauty industry. So what is amazing is that we put the information out there. It gets circulated throughout the internet and literally travels across. We have at least 13, 14 platforms of our own, okay? And that's not even talking social media.
Wow.
So we're well entrenched out there.
Yes.
So this has been important. So, Jossie, for you guys out there, if you're just tuning in, let me kind of bring you on up to speed here. My very special guest who is on with us is Jossie Vo Naturale. She came to us a few months ago. And, Jossie, I don't think you had done radio, am I right?
No, this was my first time.
That was your first time? That's amazing. So she came in, and literally you did your homework. You came up with some wonderful topics for our listeners and fans of the program. And literally we would go through each of those topics, which I found to be incredibly beneficial. So first, just we're going to give you a proper send-off today on the Hair Radio Morning Show on this snowy morning here in New York.
Yes.
And I do mean it's snowy up here. It's I hate it. So we're not going to talk too much about it. But we'll check in on the weather and all that in just a bit. But first, Jossie, I want you to remind everybody. Now tell everyone what makes All Natural products a little different than a bunch of the other hair brands that are available today.
Yes. Well, my products are a little bit different because of the way that I try to make them. I realized in my natural hair journey that a lot of the natural products that I was using, the product itself was a good product, but they contained a lot of harmful preservatives. So what I was trying to do was make a natural product with a limited amount of preservatives, and I used natural preservatives and also use refrigeration as one of my preservative methods. And I just reduce the amount of preservatives in my products. They don't last as long as the store-bought product, of course, but it's a lot more healthier and more natural for your hair. And that's like the whole idea of like All Natural. I wanted to be pure and like gentle.
Well, I love that, because when you talk about lasting on the shelf, the store products, which are loaded with preservatives, you know, you would think that they would more so put the healthy part first, I think. But, you know, when it comes to, yeah, let's just be real here. A lot of these companies, the reason that they do that is so it has a longer shelf life. And it all is kind of connects back to money and all kinds of other things, in my personal opinion. But I love that, you know, being in the hair business where we're able to speak with folks who focus on natural hair products for the most part and are able to be conscious of the fact of what you are telling folks to put into their hair. And so this has been something that you've been incredibly vocal about on our show.
Yes.
So I'm super happy about that. And we're going to be talking with you throughout the hour. So we've got a lot planned this morning. And then coming up, we should have Harlan Will should be filing a report. So we might cut in to get his news report on, which he just talks about things that are critical, are important to our community that we might have overlooked, or news stories that we might want to talk about. And I hate to say the word news stories because they're not so much news stories, but things that are of interest to the community. And I kind of like that. And so we'll get him on as well. And maybe we'll, you know, give a little send off for you on that as well. So, but today, I also want to just take a moment, Jossie. So in addition to finding out about Au Naturel, which they can, let's talk a little bit about, you know, your topic, which you have really been talking about, regimen for keeping your hair clean. You know, you really have. You've beat the drum on it. So what,
yes,
for the folks who are just tuning in today who've never heard this before, what would you say to those folks on keeping your hair clean and creating a regimen for these winter months?
Yes. Well, keeping your hair clean is something that should be done all year round. Depends on what type of shampoo you're using. It is recommended, actually, in the wintertime to, you know, not wash your hair as much because shampoo, sometimes they contain agents that strip your hair, such as alcohol.
Right.
And if you are stripping your hair of the nourishment that you need, and plus the air is dry, the weather is cold, they recommend, you know, doing that less or wash your hair with conditioner in the wintertime. But as far
as,
like, the routine regimen for, like, all year round, I tell people at least once a week. Some people wash their hair every day. Some people wash their hair every other day. You know, I don't recommend going 2 weeks or a month without washing your hair. The reason I say that is because when you wash your hair, when you put product in your hair, it eventually, like anything else, it builds up. And when it builds up in your hair, it clogs your pores, it prevents your hair from growing. And you want to keep your
scalp clean. And remember that we were debunking that myth. You folks know what I'm talking about in our community. Let me just be real here, where folks, some people say, oh, dirty hair grows. I don't know if you've heard that, Jossie, but
yes.
I've heard it, like, as a little kid. You know, of course, I didn't know anything about hair care so much, but I've always heard that kind of thing, and there are probably some folks listening right now who believe that. So to those people, what do you say?
Well, I can't prove that, but I don't see how that's, you know,
how that's logical, right?
Yes, because
exactly.
You know, when your hair is dirty, your pores are clogged up. Your hair can't really grow.
Exactly.
So we have to wash our hair and make sure we're constantly keeping our scalp and hair clean, so that when we're adding the product, that the product can be absorbed in our hair. You
that's
know, it's hard for something to be absorbed if everything's clogged up, almost like a clogged sink. You know, the water doesn't drain
absolutely
out.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is kind of, and that's the thing. And it just reminds me, like, when we had Madam Walker's great-great-granddaughter, Lelia Bundles, on the program, and I remember she was talking about that myths, you know, things that are not true, but we have passed them along in the black hair community as if they are facts or truth. And even when she herself, a relative or descendant of Madam C.J. Walker, would tell folks that she did not create the straightening comb, no one believes that she did not create it. You know, we all think she was the one who created the straightening comb. And it's so funny because, you know, I know better, of course, with my wonderful resources. But the thing is, we've always heard these things. They are myths.
Yeah.
And we've got to debunk them. We've got to educate the folks. We've got to start early because it's important. You want to have hair. Well, these are things that you've got to do to have hair. And that's the kind of thing that has to be passed down. You know, so Jossie, I want to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk with you a little bit on some of your products. So, yes, I want some descriptions. We want some names. And we want to talk about how to get them, okay? And so that's something we want to do when we come right back. Folks, you're tuned in. It's live today. It's Friday, January 7th. I'm Kerry Hines. We'll be right back. We're taking a short commercial break. You guys know I'm on with Jossie of Au Natural. Coming up, Harlem Will should be with us for a quick break and to give us what's going on in the world and things that we should know and things that we should care about. So stay tuned. We've got a lot farther to go this morning. Stay with us.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at ChairWatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
This is Queen Treat, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Kerry Hines.
I'm Crystal Jones Vaughn of the Sways Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Kerry Hines.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air.
I'm Kerry Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
Hi, my name is Ajak Deng. I am 27 years old, and I've been modeling for 8 years.
Hi, my name is Nya Kim Garowich. I am 25 years old, and I've been modeling for 2 years.
Hi, my name is Leomi Anderson. I'm 24 years old, and I've been modeling for nearly 11 years now.
Hi, my name is Kadia Diaz. I'm 21 years old, and I've been modeling for 2.5 years now.
This one girl asked me one time, she's like, is it true that when black people take a shower, or like the dark black people take a shower, the water don't touch your skin? Like you don't feel the wet of the water in my skin, on your skin? And I was just like, huh? This doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you get in the water, you're going to get wet, despite of your black, yellow, purple.
One of the instances is where I was waiting at a casting for 3 hours. They'd seen my face. I'd been sitting there amongst the other girls. And when I finally got into the casting, they say to me, sorry, we're not looking for any African people. And I'm just like, well, that's 3 hours of my life I can't get back because of you, kind of thing. And I was just literally like to them, you know, if you're going to be racist, let me just tell you one thing. My heritage is Jamaican, but we're all from Africa. And they're just like, I'm just like, really? Like, it's the ignorance was just like so shocking.
I had so many crazy experience with hair and makeup.
Being backstage and not having someone to do my hair right or do my makeup right makes me feel like I'm not represented. Like, no one just really cares about my skin color or my hair type.
Before I even had cut my hair like this, I used to have an afro. You know, you could do a lot with an afro. You know, you could either braid it or straighten it or curly it, but it was like, we don't know what to do with your hair. The texture is too nappy.
I always have to travel with a brush and gel. Because when I'm backstage, sometimes I have to do my hair or do my makeup. Well, it's not that they don't provide someone to do it, but they won't do it the way I like it, or it won't be, you know, what I want.
But I had an experience in Milan where I went through hell, basically. They glued in a whole head of extensions, they ripped them out, they blow-dried my hair, they straightened it, they put hairspray, and then literally he was just about to put, like, a really water-based gel on my hair, and I just turned around and I said, if you put this in my hair, it's going to make my hair go frizzy. And he literally just started going off, like calling me like the B word, telling me, who do I think I am? Who do I think I'm talking to? He can end my career in 2 minutes. And this is when I was 17 years old and it was in a room full of people. I felt so embarrassed and I was literally in tears. And that was when I really realized that, you know, being a black model is a completely different experience.
I was at this campaign and backstage they didn't know how to do my hair. So they felt like, basically they had a white hairstylist and this guy didn't know how to do braids and he just like parted my hair and did whatever he wanted with it and I wasn't happy with it.
Backstage, yes, absolutely, because not everybody has the correct products to use on dark skin, or maybe they do have it, but they don't think of the whole undertone thing, because, you know, I have a red undertone, even though I'm darker than most.
I feel like often black models have to redo their makeup, and I remember all, like, the black models coming to me because I was the only one with my makeup bag, like, Leomi, I need some powder, the stuff that they're putting on me, they're trying to say it's translucent, but it's white, like, help me out here. So, yeah, it's an instance that I've come across numerous amounts of time.
I feel like it's unfair, because white models don't have to do it. I've been in a lot of backstage and it's only the black models that do that.
Most of the time, if a makeup artist doesn't know what they're doing with my skin, I just kind of want to be the teacher that they never had. Bring out my own, my little, you know, makeup bag and just say, you know what, as you can see, this it's the same, but this has more red in it and this is just gray. So it's going to make my skin gray. But if you want, you can mix that with this and then we'll get the perfect color of mine. And it's like, oh, most of the time they listen. Most of the time they want to fight you on it.
When I would go to a show or photo shoot, you know, and then I would sit at a makeup artist's chair, you know, and expecting them to, like, put on a foundation, highlight, you know, concealer, you know, all the type of, all stuff you do for makeup. And it's like, as they never have any products for me. You know, I was like, we don't know what to do. And it was like, oh, this is my favorite line. You don't need foundation. Your skin is so flawless. Like, no, you don't have the foundation. It's not that my skin is flawless.
In New York, a lot of makeup artists know how to do black skin, so we never really have that problem in New York. In London, they kind of are very well advanced out there, and they know how to do it. It's when you get to Milan and Paris, or like Spain, that they just like, oh my god, I finally got a dark skin girl, so here's my darkest makeup brand I've never used. You're like, that's not right.
Why is it that if a white model says, ah, you're hurting me, it's like, oh, sorry, babe, but me, it's like, oh, your grandma must have, I'm just like, no. My grandma has a nice soft touch, lies, because everyone knows your grandma hurts your head, but she gets the job done, unlike them, so it's fine, you know?
This guy goes, do you taste like chocolate if I lick you? I was like, what? He's like, do you look like you taste like dark chocolate. So I just want to see, can I lick your hand? I was like, no, you're not going to do that. And he's like, why not? I just want to taste it. I was like, lick your hand and you tell me what that tastes like. And he did. And he's like, it tastes like skin. I'm like, that's what mine tastes like. Have a good day.
The thing that really drives me is the fact as well that I don't know what the future holds. Every single day, every single season, we're seeing so much progression for young black women within all industries. So I'm like, if I give up now, who knows where I could be? I could be like the Oprah Winfrey of the fashion industry.
Brands are just trying to make black girls this trend, and it's not a trend. It's diversity, it's representation, it's everything. And it's sad, it's very sad.
I want to leave a good mark in the industry. I want to do something that's going to change a lot of people's lives, and that's going to help the world, humanity. So the future is bright. The future is promising for us, and I think we all just have to stick together and work together, because it's the only way we can make it further.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
Hi, I'm Jossie from Joss's All Natural. Have you been struggling with keeping your natural hair healthy or desire to achieve substantial hair growth? Then Joss's All Natural is here to help you. My natural creams, conditioners, lotions, hair mists, balms, shampoos, and detanglers are gentle enough for the whole family and all hair types. Not only do I provide natural hair products, I also give step-by-step techniques to ensure healthy hair in a pure and gentle fashion, from roots to ends. Come on and visit me at www.jossiesallnatural.com. That's JossiesAllNatural.com for a true natural hair experience like you've never had before.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show, Gary Hines. It's Friday morning, January 7th of 2022. It's our show number 652, so 652 as we march towards now 700 of live broadcasts of this new edition, shall we say, of the Hair Radio Morning Show. Okay, so listen, we've got Jossie of All Natural that we're bringing back to the line, and we're so happy. Today, we're happy. It's a little bit of mixed feelings. I'm going to just go ahead and put it out there, because today is Jossie's last day with us. You know, she's been joining us for the last few months on Wednesdays and Fridays. You did double duty here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, Jossie. And helping everybody with hair information, hair tips, and hair care. And we're going to miss you here. It's been just wonderful having you. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, it has been.
Yes. So listen, before the little break there that we took, I wanted to talk a little bit more. We mentioned All Natural, but can you tell folks a little bit, what are some of the products that All Natural features? And tell us about their features.
Yes. So I make all natural hair products, of course, and I focus on mostly conditioners, like leave-in conditioners. I do have lotions. I have balms, oils, shampoos. I have like hair mists, like different moisturizing sprays, and I just have a variety of products. I make them for men, women, and children, and most of them are vegan.
The whole family, everybody.
Yes, I do. Yes, I decided to include the whole family just so, you know, I can have more to offer.
Yes, and that's, that's kind of rare to me in the hair game because most of the products are targeted to one sex or the other. You rarely don't hear the whole family, and that is just, I love it, and that is amazing. So, au naturel. Now, Jossie, as I said a little earlier at the top of our segment, folks always write to you and ask you questions. So how should they contact you, and how can they find out about what's, like a website? How can they find out about more about au naturel?
Yes, my website is www.jossiesallnatural.com. It's spelled JOCEYSAUNATURALE.com. And I can be reached via my website. There is a contact page on my website for you to reach me. There's also ways people have reached out to me, mostly through social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram. You can reach out to me on those as well. And I also have an Etsy for those who are international.
Wow. And I'll tell you another way that they can stay in touch, right here through the Hair Radio Show.
That's correct. That is
right? Correct. We'll always stay connected. And we're going to get Jossie back here, folks. At some point in the future, we'll get her back here on the show. Okay, Jossie, as promised, it is time for Harlem Will. And you guys met right here on the broadcast before. We're going to bring him to the line. Harlem Will is... he does the Harlem Will Report, which we're real excited about here, and it's really the things that you should know about or care about in our community and just keeping us abreast of what's happening out there. I'm going to go ahead and just jump on in. Harlem Will, are you there? You're on the line with Jossie and Carrie Hines. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Carrie. Good morning, Jossie.
Good morning.
Happy Friday to you.
Yes, thank you. Happy Friday to you as well.
Yes, you go right ahead, Harlem. Well, I'm sorry. I think I stepped right all over you.
No, okay. Yeah, just wanted to make sure. No worries. So today on the Harlem Real Report, I wanted to make a bit of a focus on one particular item today, and it's about something that's very important that's been affecting everyone across, I would say, either not just across the nation, but across the globe for the better part of the last 2 years, but especially last year. And it's the mental health of people going on, the state of mental health happening with people today. So a lot of people have been very stressed and very lonely, and, you know, they've been trying to cope with the new normal these days. And a lot of people, that the anxiety levels are just going through the roof.
Yes, I'm raising my hand right here.
Exactly. I mean, has anybody else been feeling it? From Carrie, Jossie, from All Natural? I mean, come on. Has anybody else been feeling this way?
Well, Jossie, I don't know about you. You're right, but I can honestly say here, it's been crazy in recent times. And just to, you know, to make it on through the day, that's, and I have to say, Harlem, well, I appreciate the report this morning. That's exactly why we do this broadcast. We want folks to wake up and get a little taste of cultural talk, community talk, hair and beauty talk, but a feel-good show, you know, just something as an alternative to turning on the TV. When I turn on the TV, a few minutes later, I'm turning it off. It's that bad to me. So I wanted to create a program that whatever time you get up between 6 and 9 in the morning, you can hear something that is just a little different and from folks who really do care about what you're hearing and what you do with what you hear. Okay. So that's my take on it, Harlem Will. Good stuff. Now, what about you, Harlem Will? What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts about it are that I try to do a lot of things that's recommended by healthcare experts. A lot of people have been very open-minded these days, especially in 2021, about actually seeing a therapist. And that is something that I've actually taken advantage of. I went to I actually went and called a therapist, and it was actually been very different from what I
was about
expected.
To say. Don't say therapeutic. But no,
yeah,
I hear you.
Right?
No, I'm loving that.
It's something that's very different that I didn't expect to
right.
have. And I think it comes from the stigma of therapy, especially within the Black community. About
oh, absolutely. And,
like,
and not
oh,
to
I
mention.
I don't need that person. I'm sorry.
Don't forget to put the gender on it. Black men, we even more so are kind of resistant
black
to that idea.
Of
yeah.
course. The numbers are very high for Black men who don't go and seek therapy.
Exactly.
So it's something that I took very – it's something that I decided to take a different approach to. And, of course, in New York Times, they're also helping out people as well, you know, because everyone across the board, across the gender, across the country was affected by mental health. So one of the things that I started doing was giving it a name. And one of the things listed in New York Times about approaching it, it just happens to be the same thing. So I would give my anger a name. I would call it Bruce. Right? So, and they say, and it's funny that they say one of their items, they say, give it a name. So if I would get angry,
wow.
if my anger would get upset or the anxiety would get up there, I would say, Bruce Banner is coming out again. I need to take
oh,
a walk.
Oh, okay.
Here.
That's the Hulk.
Yeah, that's the, exactly. So my mom, she would understand exactly where I'm coming from. It took her a while to pick up on what I was saying, but then I explained
wow.
to her. I was like, yeah, that's Bruce, that's the, you know, that's anxiety, that's the frustration coming over, so I'm just going to take a walk for a while. She was like, just make sure not to go and hitchhike somewhere. So, but
yeah, exactly.
That was a stress reliever for one of it. Has anybody ever thought about naming their stress?
No. And if I did give it a name, it wouldn't be one I could give over the air. I could say it on the airways. But I'll
right.
tell you this. What about you, Jossie? You have,
no.
because in the hair business, yeah, we haven't given a name. But I'll tell you this, though, and what I appreciate that you're bringing us to light, you know, to literally to talk about. It's something so critical and so important, Harlem Will. Would you be able to continue with this conversation on an ongoing basis? Let's really make it. It's right here on our broadcast. It's the Year of the Woman, but I also want to make it about mental health and what can we do. It's not just what, you know, the outside health of our hair and even just the health of our body, but it's what's going on in our heads that we also are concerned about and behaviors and all of that. So is it something that we can, you know, bring to light, share websites and resources? We'll put some links to on hairradio.com that can really help drive this forward.
Absolutely. I can drop them off on our fan page at thehairradio.com, at thehairradio.fanpage. And
absolutely.
You can have,
and
I'll
perhaps,
have all the links and the tips to it. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I was just going to suggest that maybe we can make March Mental Health Month right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show and share resources throughout the entire month of March.
Oh,
we have next
sure.
month as Black History Month, and then I think March would be great to make it official. And this could be something that can roll into an annual thing. So, Harlem Will, I just want to say thank you. Great job, as always, on the Harlem Will Report, and we so appreciate it. Good stuff. Now, listen, I want to turn a moment over to Miss Jossie. We're going to just miss Miss Jossie. We got to send her off with a big, big, big take care this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Jossie has done such a great job. I really have to say, from just coming in and not having had ever been on radio and stuff like that, you know, can you remember what that was like, Harlem Will? I can remember a little bit, but it's going way back for me. So, you know, just to be able to say goodbye to a person who came in and just knocked it out of the park.
It was brief for me. So, but
yeah.
It was just so brief, so it was like, oh, man, she's here. Then all of a sudden, oh, she's gone? No, oh, no.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, because, you know, that's right. And Jossie, because you came back in a little bit on the tail end of Jossie, But she's been with us, you know, a couple months and really going through, you know, and my thing, Jossie, the first thing I told you this morning, I said, you know, I told her even off air as well, because to me, I've been to, you know, obviously I've done hundreds of shows. I've literally interviewed thousands of persons on the show. And I speak to a lot of trichologists. I speak to a lot of hair experts. I speak to product companies. And I have my own product line. So, you know, I'm entrenched in this business. But when I got Jossie on, she was so, you know, passionate about caring about making sure, and Jossie, you would send me information in the middle of the night on show topics, and I said, okay, you know what? This young lady cares. And and I love that. That really, you don't know how much that resonated with me, literally. And I would wake up literally when I hear the alarm go off and tell me I have a message from Jossie. I would look at it, read it. I don't care what time it is. I could barely see, and I'm reading through the message to see what Jossie was going to cover on the broadcast in the morning. And so you've done a great job. And then not only that,
Thank you. You came on
and you shared, yes, you shared the tips from the fans, your social media fans, who would write in to ask you questions. You literally brought that feedback to our program, and you shared that right here across our platform, and I just thought that was remarkable. So, yeah, so we're going to miss you a little bit here on the show. Now, Jossie, so tell folks, you know, what's next for you, Jossie? What are you going to be doing next that you can share with us this morning that you'd like to share?
Yes, well, I plan to go back to the medical field. That's where I'm from, of course,
wow.
That's where I was working.
Wow.
I just took a break from it just so I can kind of get my business a little bit underway. I wanted things situated, get things rolling a little bit, you know, end of last year, start of this year. And since I was able to get things taken care of a lot faster than I thought, now, you know, it's my opportunity to go back to the workforce because I love what I do. I love helping people, and
yes.
I love working in the medical field. And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to be headed back, probably not completely full time. Well, not 5 days a week. I think more so like 4 days a week. But,
well,
you know,
listen,
still.
That's big. That's big. And as a first responder and right on the front line, we certainly applaud you and we salute you for that. We do. That is something that's really critical and important and obviously very much needed. I kind of think it kind of harkens back to what Harlem was saying. I think this is very, very good. I'm very proud. We're so proud of you for that. Okay,
thank you.
So continue. Yes, great success with all of that, great luck. And I just want to say I think it's remarkable. I also wanted to take a moment to shout out one of my favorite moments with Jossie when she came on, the very first broadcast that she came on to. And you were telling us how I love the stories about your family, how they, when you were testing your products, they would joy that you would literally test your products on your family's hair. And, you know, and I asked you all about that, and it was just a memorable moment. And the other, my favorite moment was your mom called in and talked with us briefly on the airwaves. So we are just shouting her out as well this morning. And just so we appreciate you being with us.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, so we look forward to following along on all of that stuff. So listen, we're going to send you off. We're going to send you off with a song this morning. And it's just something, it's our little way to just thank you again. You heard this. This is one of my favorites. It's I Am Not My Hair. I don't think there's any other more appropriate song to send Jossie out with today. And Harlem, well, we'll chat a little bit longer. So, you know, a couple minutes, you know, I want to just check in with you again and we'll chat a little bit. Jossie, thank you. Any last words you want to say before I put on the song for you this morning? Anything you want to say to us?
Yeah, just
to say to your fans. Yes. Your fans.
Keep in mind everything that I've said over the different broadcasts, you know, healthy hair, healthy skin, healthy life, and, you know, just stay safe and best. Do you, be happy, and you'll succeed.
Excellent words. Well, you continue with Au Naturel. You've got something big, okay? So you continue.
Yes.
No matter what you do, we love that you're going back out there in the world, especially so much needed now in the health area. But please keep Au Naturel running forward, okay?
I definitely will, yes. Thank you so
much. All right. You got it. Well, here is your song, I Am Not My Hair, Miss India Auri. All right, stay with us, folks.
Is that India? What happened to her hair?
Little girl with the pressing curl. Age 8, I got a Jerry curl. 13, and I got a relaxer. I was a source of so much laughter. 15, when it all broke down. 18, and I went all natural. February 2002, I went on and did what I had to do. Because it was time to change my life, to become the woman that I am inside. 97 dreadlocks all gone. I looked in the mirror for the first time and saw that, hey, I am not my hair. I am not this skin. I am not your expectations. No, no. I am not my hair. I am not this skin. I am the soul that lives within.
What's she doing to her hair?
I don't know. It looks crazy. I like it. I might do that.
I wouldn't go that far.
Good hair means curls and waves. Bad hair means you look like a slave. At the turn of the century, it's time for us to redefine who we be. You can shave it off like a South African beauty. Got it on lock like Bob Marley. You can rock it straight like Oprah Winfrey. If it's not what's on your head, it's what's underneath. And say, hey,
I am not my hair. I am not this skin. I am not your expectations. No.
Does the way I wear my hair make me a better person? Does the way I wear my hair make me a better friend? Oh, does the way I wear my hair determine my integrity? I am expressing my fertility. Breast cancer and chemotherapy took away her crown and glory. She promised that if she was to survive, she would enjoy every day of her life. Oh, on national television, diamond eyes are sparkling. Bald headed like a full moon shining. Singing out to the whole wide world like, hey, 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 hey,
I am not my
hair. I am not this skin.
I am not your expectations. No,
I am not my hair. I am not this skin.
I am
the soul that lives within me.
Not your expectation,
no,
no.
I am the soul that lives.
I am the soul that lives.
So if I wanna shave the pro, so I wanna rock rocks, that'll take a bit away from the soul that I got. If I wanna wear it braided all down my back, I don't see nothing wrong with that.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your two feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com. providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
But radio commercials as much as they do television commercials?
Maybe more so.
How do you figure that?
Well, in television, your tube goes minutes just before the commercial comes on.
Yeah?
That serves as a warning device to millions of people that they have a split second to get out of the room.
I never thought of that.
In radio, an advertiser can just sort of sneak up on you without any warning.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you haven't noticed your car radio suddenly fading to black before the commercial, have you?
And not recently, no. But can't you still walk out when the radio commercial comes on?
Not at 60 miles an hour.
Okay, but do you think you can really make me pay attention to a radio commercial?
I just did.
Clint Beast on the boom.
You niggas be tripping.
What up, bro? You rocking with State Watch shit. I'm inviting everybody to take a look and listen to see what I got going on. Catch me streaming on all music platforms under Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses. You can also find me on social media, Statewide Chip on Facebook, Statewide Chip Official on Instagram, and Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses on YouTube.
Right, we're back live. It's Friday, January 7th of 2022. It's about 8:01 in the morning as we broadcast live from New York City. I'm bringing back to the line the one and only man from the other part of the other borough, I'll say. We're talking about Harlem Will from right here in New York. Harlem Will, good morning again and welcome. Happy Friday.
Good morning and happy Friday.
Yes, now it is snowing outside. I don't know even if it stopped or not. I haven't looked out the window in a couple of hours. But, again, how are you handling the snow? It's really the first big snow here in New York. I should say the first snow in New York this season, really. So how are you dealing with it in Manhattan?
Yeah, here in Harlem, Manhattan. I always like to put that that Harlem ahead of Manhattan. No, it's really interesting the fact that, like you said, this is the first snow day, the actual snow hitting the ground, sticking and building up that we've had all year. And it's actually beautiful to look at, you know, because we didn't get a snowy Christmas. So I'm taking it in and just enjoying it as one of the things that we didn't get a chance to enjoy last year. So I'm just going to take it in, and this is usually right around the time when New York really starts getting into that cold weather and those snow days really start to build up. So we're going to see if it continues, and I'm just taking you one day at a time. I got my Tims. I'm ready.
Yes. Well, I have to say, here on you guys know I'm in Brooklyn, and the streets were so slippery. I kid you not, like yesterday or so, it was like super icy, and you couldn't even tell. I literally was slipping and sliding. I can only imagine cars. So I will continue to keep an eye out here. Just be careful for our folks who are reeling and dealing with the weather. Just, you know, hang on in there and stay inside and listen to the Hair Radio Morning Show. That's how you get through the mornings here. So listen, kind of did a little bit of some of the wonderful information that you were talking about this morning on mental health through the Harlem Will Report, which I love that. And let this be the very beginning of, you know, bringing that that kind of information to our show. So Harlem Will, I wanted you to stick around a little bit. What else have you got for us this morning?
Oh, well, again, I was going to keep it here on mental health because, again, like both me and Carrie mentioned, the mental anxiety that's been going across the globe, really, but here particularly in the States, has been very heightened by the current situation, that would not be named at this point, but it raised a lot of the mental illness. It raised a lot of mental anxiety, and, yes, it is causing some mental illness for a lot of folks. And just to give people a reminder, remember we had two famous female athletes, two by the name of Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles, who famously had to take steps away from their sport because they were going through mental anxieties and had mental breakdowns where they just had to take a mental day for themselves, and they didn't want to jeopardize their careers as well as their health for it. And it's something that really opened a lot of people's eyes to the fact that, yes, even these high-performing athletes, these career-minded, hyper-focused, super successful athletes, and young ladies, by the way, as well, they needed a mental break to be able to step away and collect themselves. And it's something that a lot of people, especially here in the States, needed to be able to do because we work so many hours, we work so hard, and yet we rarely find the time to actually take a day for ourselves and just relax. And that's something that, as I'm sure Mr. Kerry Hines here on the Hair Radio Show is very used to, because the guy's been running his own show for, what, 100 years now?
Well, it certainly feels like that, and that's why I need that mental break day or mental day break or what have you. That's absolutely correct.
Absolutely a thing.
Exactly, driving hard day in and day out. And it's funny, I was talking with Jossie earlier about that, because by the end of the week, we're tired, we're exhausted from getting up from, when I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to prepare for the show, typically each day. And so it can wear you. That's why on Mondays, we tend to run a repeat or encourage you to listen to one of our archive broadcasts, because it's we are live. You can join in and call in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Those 3 days, that's been the only way that I could keep the show going. When I first came on the air back in 2015 as the morning edition of the Hair Radio Show, again, we've been around for 25 years altogether, or even longer at this point. But when I came back to the airwaves in January 5th of 2015, I remember that was a Monday. So I used to do Mondays as well. Often I would be live all 5 days. And I was so unfamiliar with the platform that for the first 6 months, I did all live every day. I'd not even taken a day off. And that was because I didn't know how to program the platform, the schedule things. I had no idea. So I just, all I knew was to get on live and hit the button. And that's all I did. So I was live every, you don't know. I felt like a robot at the end of those 6 months. And so if you go back to our archive shows for 2015, you'll hear, I put in, I filed a lot of shows. And but it was the beginning that we needed, but it was tough. So that mental health break type talk, I love it, because we all are under pressure. First of all, I think as African-Americans, we're under additional several additional layers of stress. I always say, and this is just my talk, I'm not asking for anybody to condone it or if it's the talk of anybody else on the show, but I feel that we as people of color are, I say often that I think we have PTSD. That's the way I feel, but I'm not going to go there this morning. It's Friday, we're going to keep it on fun. But so I love that you are bringing this topic up. I so love it, because it is something, and we all can benefit from therapy. Let me just say that, period. And if you think you don't need to benefit from therapy, you need to benefit most. You need to be the first one hitting the button to call. So so this is something that's critical. That's what I said. This is not a subject that we're going to, do just today, one and done. This needs to be an ongoing conversation that the Harlem World Report needs to stay on top of, for us.
Absolutely.
So that's my take.
That excellent take, Mr. Carrigans, because we have we have one of the highest rates of depression amongst all the demographics at 8.9% in the country, followed by Hispanics, and then followed by whites, bringing up the rear. So we go through a lot of mental gymnastics ourselves. But of course, we across the board, everybody's anxiety has been heightened. But particularly here in the Black community, especially around the stigma of the mental health, it's something that we need to explore a lot more, especially in the last couple of years. This is something that we need. And being able to find tactics to be able to find that stress relief, being able to relieve that anxiety, and just overall feel good about ourselves, because we should feel good about ourselves. And I think, just to bring up one more thing, one of the greatest things that we ever had, and I just want to mention, since it is the Year of the Woman, Black Girl Magic was one of the blessed monikers that blessed the community in the world that took over, because black women had been always degraded and looked down upon, or pressure was placed on their shoulders in an unjust way. So, but the way they turned it around, the way the community turned it around, was somebody came up, and I meant to look up who came up with the moniker of Black Girl Magic, but someone came up with that, and all of a sudden it took off, because then people stopped feeling, a lot of women stopped feeling bad about taking on so much and having to do so much and, you know, having to take on the pressures of the world. And they said, you know what, we're going to spin it around and make it one of our greatest achievements. It's just going to be a notch on the belt, and we can celebrate ourselves with that. And that's a good tip about mental health that people can take from. You know, take something that is an anxiety and then being able to celebrate it. Say, that's Black Girl Magic, being able to be a mom, be an entrepreneur, take care of my education, and make sure I'm still responsible to, you know, take care of the household things, the everyday things of the world. That's Black Girl Magic right there. And again, that's something that shows you can take care of your mental health and really flourish with it, as long as you can do it in a healthy way. And that's something that I wanted to start expressing, especially for the community, and talk about one of the tactics we could use to attack mental health in the community.
Absolutely. Well, the celebrities, I love the mention of Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka. I think that these are folks, as you said, who took a step back. And these are folks who are rich and famous and in the spotlight. And I love that they did that, that you don't, no matter who you are, whether you are packing groceries at the supermarket, or whatever it is that you're doing, or a big superstar in gymnastics or what have you, or tennis. But the thing is, just know that it's about self-care. And so that's our program, The Hair Radio Show. We're for everybody, male, female, old, young. But from time to time, we put a focus on female care. And this is one of those times. And for mental health, it's everybody, like the young lady was saying, the whole family. And these days, we're under enormous amounts. And listen, folks, let me just, again, keeping it real here on the broadcast, as they say, keeping it 100, I'll tell you, the reason that we don't see enough on television about the stress that the African-American community is dealing with and reeling from every single solitary day of being affected by things that we see on the news and are dealing with in our own lives, thanks, America, is because we don't have the equivalent, you know, it's in terms of broadcasting power just yet. We're working on it here at the Hey Radio Show, but we don't. So these are things that add to that stress level. And so I love this topic. I want to keep on. I also want to look at ways that we can begin to alleviate that stress. My suggestion is to wake up and listen to the Hair Radio Morning Show, because that's what we're working on. Every morning we get up so that we can find other ways for you to cope. And also, Harlem Will, I want people to know that they're not alone. They're not alone.
Absolutely.
We get on this show, we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly. We talk about the warts. We talk about the beauty. We talk about going through, you know, because we're a family, we're a team. We're going to go through these things together. And that's what this broadcast aims to do. It's to highlight that you're not just out there by yourself fighting the good fight. And we care about you. We're going to tell you, you know, so each morning. And if you're doing things you shouldn't be doing, well, we're also going to yell at you sometimes. And we expect you to do the same for us. And we get back on track. We forget about it, get back on track, and keep it moving. And that's what this broadcast aims to do. And we do it with folks like Harlem Will, with the young lady that you heard earlier, Jossie from Au Naturel. We do it with the folks at Vet Talk Radio Show and Michael Hopkins and his angels. We do it with everybody who's coming to the show. And we have a whole flock of new people. I hate to say flock because we're not birds. But we have a whole bunch of new folks coming to this broadcast, Harlem Will. You have no idea. We have a great deal. We're in talks with many, many folks to come back to the show. I do nothing but booking when I hang up at 9 o'clock after we hang up our mic. At 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, I go into booking mode. So we book new guests. We have a ton of new folks who will be coming for new, fresh live hair talk. I shared on social media this morning that next week begins our coverage of the one and only Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and what his legacy, our legacy, means at this time, this critical time in American history. And so we are looking forward to rolling out that coverage. So that begins next week on the broadcast. We have Dr. Obeng, of course, you guys know, the miracle doctor from Beverly Hills, California. You'll be on with us again 1 year later. 1 year later, we're the first to look at the whole glue girl, the gorilla glue girl situation. So so Dr. Obeng, who was one of the first to be on our show, who was directly involved in this last year, will be returning for an all-new exclusive interview and update. So I am super hyped about it. I cannot wait. So that's coming up. And I've got some authors and book writers and folks who will be joining us to talk about their books. We're also, don't forget, February kicks off, Black History Month. So we are going to be going in, you know, as they say, the kids say going in, we're going to be going in on really presenting a whole month of not just one or two well-known, go-to, I call it the go-to black, famous black people who have done things, which is awesome, and no one is taking anything away from that. But we are going to do something, I feel that as the Hair Radio Morning Show, where we're about culture, a big part of what we say and do, if not everything, it runs the fabric of the program, I think we have to do more than just lip service. We have to do more than just surfacey talk when it comes to paying tribute during Black History Month. So I'm looking forward to it. There's a book called Black History 365.org. You guys have heard Dr. Joel A. Freeman. He himself he's a wonderful Caucasian gentleman out of Maryland who has a PhD. He goes through in psychology, speaking of which. And so that's his area of study. And he has a huge collection, amazing collection of black artifacts. And so he will get on some wonderful commentary from him, as well as his book, along with Dr. Milton, just amazing folks who have written this amazing book. Again, Black History 365, .org. You can Google it out there. It's amazing. So we'll be covering and taking some parts and bits and pieces from his book to cover on air. So Harlem Will, I am excited. I'm looking forward to, you know, the Harlem Will Report, expanding our coverage on Dr. Martin Luther King and coming up on Black History Month and the Year of the Woman and, you know, some of the challenges that are out there in our community so that we can do better and do well with the mental challenges that lie, you know, that we're dealing with and coping with. So good work.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And just to throw one more caveat out there for folks, I know one of those New Year's resolutions is exercise. Keep in mind, exercise actually helps with your mental health as well. So don't beat yourself up.
That's a tough one.
If you haven't jumped on, if you
not
haven't
at
jumped
all.
On it just yet.
Not as I got on the air. It's funny that you say that. Just 1 week ago, I told everybody 3 days a week I'll be doing the exercises. I look back at the calendar, and not one time have I been in my gym to work out or to do anything. Now, I have not touched the gym equipment since we talked about it. But you know what? that ends today. I am going to go in there following today's broadcast, and I'm going to do a workout on this snowy day in New York City. So I'm real excited about that. Harlem, Will, good job. What can I say to you, sir? You really are always, and I just want to thank you for being a trooper and getting up early to do these broadcasts, and it means a lot. So so thank you, and you've been knocking it out of the box, because folks, you know, getting up and doing these shows, it's not easy. It's not. And you strike the right chord, and that takes time. So you've done a great job with it, and I just want on air to acknowledge that.
Well, I appreciate it, Mr. Kerry Hines, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to be introduced to the hair radio world and with the fan base, because I just strive to be the best person I can be, honest, upfront, and presentable. And
well,
you saw something to me to bring me on. So, again, I've always I always want to say my thanks.
You're welcome. You've arrived. Folks, we're going to keep it moving. We got some more music, and I've got some more wonderful, wonderful things. Again, you know, over the 652 shows now, we're looking back at some of the great moments on our broadcast. So I'm going to go ahead. We'll get on a music. We'll get on some commercials, and we'll get on some of our archive material just for a little bit, and we'll be back live. We're still here. It's, you know, still much more to go this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're going to thank Harlem Will again. Harlem Will, thank you so much. We'll see you next time. I'm hoping next
All
week
right.
right here for another live report of the Harlem Will Report. So we're real excited. Thanks again. Great job.
Thank you. No problem.
All right. Here's the Staple Singers, folks. Stay with us.
I'm calling, calling, calling for mercy. Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry
Hunt. I'm Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
Monty tribute, and you know who Eric Monty is. He's the one who created all of those wonderful TV hits like The Jeffersons, Good Times, also What's Happening Now, and so many other things. So Mr. Monty, who had suffered some pretty extraordinary health issues and is doing well now, that we're happy to say. But here's the story. We'll let it, you know, just be unfolded. And let us know what you think. And again, this is by request. So stay with us. We've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. It's Friday. We'll also get some new music on. Stay with us, everybody.
Be familiar with his name, but you know his work. Have you heard of Coolie High or Good Times? He created both of them. He was the driving force behind the socially conscious sitcoms that were produced by Norman Lear, including All in the Family, Maude, Sanford and Son, The Jeffersons, What's Happening, and What's Happening Now. He assisted in creating all of those. In addition to these groundbreaking classics, he also wrote an episode of In Living Color and Moesha. Now, as you know, Eric Monty is a legend and a pioneer in the television and movie industries. He's responsible for the first successful show with the black cast since Amos and Andy. He was one of the hottest young writers in Hollywood in the 1970s. He was a trailblazer in black television by showing America and the world an authentic view of life as a black American. Now, prior to 1970, blacks were portrayed, you know, like servants, sidekicks, or clowns, and uneducated. Now, Mr. Monty created characters that were controversial and politically and socially conscious. It was the first time we saw ourselves on television living in a positive and productive way.
Thank you very much, Pierre Andre Evans, and welcome to the Hair Radio Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, this is a very special tribute to one of the most prolific TV writers of our time, Mr. Eric Monty.
Absolutely.
Now, I've got to start off with the beginning for him, you know, growing up in Chicago's Cabrini-Green housing project.
Yeah,
Can you, first of all, you being from Chicago, would you be able to tell all of us what is the Chicago Cabrini-Green housing project?
Yes. Cabrini-Green has a history of violence. It's a large group community. It has regular projects. It has row houses. It's in the north part of Chicago. It's just a little west of downtown Chicago, which is the business district. But it's known very much for all the violence and things that have happened there. A lot of movies are shot there. Candyman, you know, the TV show that was shot there. Good Times was supposed to be shot there. They did the outside from the Cabrini-Green, but the interior was done in a studio. But yeah,
exterior on Good Times. Not to interrupt you, but the exterior on Good Times. When the show is coming on and we see the big building, you know, being panned across, if you will, that's Cabrini Projects?
That's Cabrini-Green, yes. And as I said, it had, because it's demolished now, but it had about four different buildings of that size. It's more than just one building. And they also had row houses. It was different sections to it. It was a community. It was like a ungated community. You know what I mean? It was a collection of project buildings.
Uh-huh. And now, some how did that shape?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. How did that shape Eric Monty's what he shared with you? How did that shape his belief system in terms of
Yeah.
And, and how did that contribute to his writing?
Well, I know about him growing up in housing projects. He, as a child, he had creative juices flowing and deep inspirations and aspirations. He loved cowboys, you know, like Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, the Lone Ranger. And he used to ride around his house on a broomstick like it was a real horse. And one day, a white man approached him while he was playing, and he said, "Who are you supposed to be?" And Eric rode back to the man on his little broom horse, and he said, "I'm the Lone Ranger." And the man looked at him with shock and said, "You can't be the Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger is white." And that was a moment that he made a vow that when he grew up, he was going to make some black heroes. And he was telling that story to his mother. And as a child, his mother, her name was Eileen, she told him, "Little Eric, there has never, ever been a black writer in Hollywood. And if there would be, he would be some high yellow black with a Harvard degree, not some high school dropout from Cabrini-Green." And, you know, Eric being Eric responded to his mother and said, "Mama, I'm going to do this." And one week later, he left with $5 and a suitcase. And he went out to Route 66.
Well, all right. This is a live hair radio show update. I'm Carrie Hines. It is Friday morning, January 7th, 2022. If you're just tuning in, we've been having a conversation with Eric Monte as we take a look back at some of our archive material over the 652 live episodes of this, the very Hair Radio Morning Show. So this is a great conversation. I just wanted to kind of tell you that this is one of my favorite interviews of all time with the great Eric Monte. The gentleman who is on with me did a special report for Soul Train online. Of course, Soul Train, the TV show, ended years ago, and they have the awards that is, I believe, is owned by Viacom now. But in any case, so this amazing young man, Pierre from Chicago, who was very familiar with Cabrini-Green, he acted as a go-between, so to speak, because Eric Monte, the great writer from all these shows, could not speak. But he would communicate the information and responses over to Pierre, and Pierre would be on with me to give us the updates and all of that. So I just wanted to kind of chime on in, and so that's what we're having, and we're in the middle of that. So I'm going to turn you guys back over to that amazing, amazing conversation, again, with the great Eric Monte, and we'll be back live following this with more of the Hair Radio Morning Show. So again, thank you so much for being with us on this Friday morning, January 7th of 2022. When he first came to Hollywood, and even before he left Hollywood. Now, my belief is that he met Mike Evans, who we got to know as Lionel Jefferson number one and the main
character. Yes, the original Lionel.
The original Lionel, the original, the real Lionel, so to speak.
Right.
So we're going to ask you to tell us that story.
Okay. Well, but before leaving off to Hollywood, Eric had met Mike Evans, and they struck up a friendship, and they decided to collaborate and make things happen. He formed a partnership with Mike Evans, and as you said, that's the guy who played the original Lionel on All in the Family, Lionel Jefferson, I mean. And they created Good Times, and that was based on Monte's life in Cabrini-Green. And, you know, the Jeffersons, that's based on Mike Evans' life. So they first did Eric Monte's life, and then they broke off and did Mike Evans' life.
Well, I have to jump in. I've always wondered that. I never knew that the Jeffersons was Mike's side, and because we did realize that, was it a coincidence, even when you mentioned Good Times, that the family had the name Evans?
That, yes, that always, even as a child, when I grew up, people, and then I'm thin.
Right, and you're an Evans yourself.
Skin, people used to tease me and call me JJ. He said, that's the Evans family. That's your family. You know what I mean? So it wasn't funny, but I laughed at it. But I was cool. My name was on TV, so I was cool with that. But It was that's very, very coincidental.
Okay. Absolutely. And and Mike Evans, and Mike is actually the youngest of the Evans kids on Good Times.
Right. On Good Times. So he gave tribute to him on his show before they actually made the Jeffersons. He gave tribute to his partner. And that was cool.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, so that's how that all came about. So this is great. We're getting a little bit of a background.
That's how they met, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he had also once then once he got to Hollywood, I'm saying, he met up with Norman Lear, and then he wanted to create some characters. And I don't know if you want me to go into how he created the characters or anything like that.
First of all, let's tell the folks out there. And again, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and joining me, we have Mr. Pierre Andre Evans, who did a fantastic article on Eric Monte, who is the famed writer and creator from, he collaborated with Norman Lear on The Jeffersons and All in the Family and so many of the TV shows that we know and love and that were absolutely hit shows. So The Jeffersons actually ran longer than All in the Family. So these are just some wonderful characters that he created, as well as What's Happening Now, and, of course, the number one movie of our culture, which is Coolie High.
Coolie High.
So, so he's done so much, and we wanted to pay special tribute today to give you a little bit more of some of the background and some of the wonderful anecdotes that that only Pierre can share, because you have spoken with him and you maintain a wonderful friendship with Mr.
Yes,
Eric Monte. And as we've been kind of teasing it a little bit here and there, but the issues that at the end of today's wonderful journey, we're going to have a little bit of an update directly from Eric Monte to share with specifically for the fans of the Hair Radio Show. So we want you to stay with us for all of that. Now, I really have a big interest in talking about some of the TV characters that he created along the way. I want to focus for a moment on Good Times and the whole issue surrounding James.
Yeah.
The whole issue surrounding the famous, what was that line that Florida said?
Damn, James. I know that's one that she always, that's a famous line from there. Absolutely.
Exactly. It's one of the most memorable lines in TV history.
Yes,
and we want to, is there anything you can tell us about, I think, that that Eric talks about the whole thing surrounding James and how it appeared how they felt about having a strong black male character in the way that he believed. So why don't you share that story?
Okay. Eric was very, very persistent in keeping James as a character. Now, the late Esther Rolle, it was his wife, Florida, on a TV show, she's gone down on record saying that she would not do a TV show shown all around the world about a black woman with three kids and no husband. Now, she said, I won't do that. Lear's response was that America did not want to see a strong black man on television. Now, she won that round, and the great John Amos was brought in to play James Evans Sr. Now, did you know that after every episode of Good Times, the network notes contain the same request, and it said, get rid of the father. Now, since they thought that a strong black male character did not work in a sitcom, that's what they wanted to do. Now, Monte and Evans rebelled against Lear, and he wanted to write the father out of the show and embellish the stereotypical JJ character, and just put a lot of attention on JJ.
Now, we want to remind everyone that all of this is written in your article at SoulTrain.com, so they can read the exact words and, the comments and these, and all this that is said by Mr. Eric Monte directly.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I just want folks to know that these are not our words. These are the words of Mr. Eric Monty and his experience that he had while he felt he won, you know, that he felt when he was at working with CBS and working with the great Norman Lear as well. So,
these are his experience and his words. Correct.
Wow.
Now,
so go right ahead.
So, with a strong
male character.
Right. He said that Eric Monty stated that working on Good Times was real hard because all of the white writers wanted to do stereotypical roles, and he refused that. Every week he'd argue and fight, and they would ignore what he suggested and take all that, yes, sir, boss, you know, all that rooting to, yeah, yes, sir, yes, sir. He liked to take, they wanted to take that stuff to the cast, and John Amos and Esther Rowe, they wasn't having it, and they would have a fit. Then they'd give them what he wrote, what Eric Monty wrote, and then the cast would like that. So they were trying to push on the old stereotypical role, but Eric Monty wanted to progress. And then they'd shoot it, and then it would go on the air. Then the next week, it was the same fight all over again. Now, originally, Eric Monty pictured J.J. as a street-smart hustler who drove his honest, hard-working parents crazy. Eventually, they killed off James Evans, and the promotion of J.J.'s character got bigger, but the show didn't begin to keep the audience at hand, and it began to devolve into a less socially uplifting production. So with the demise of James, it lost a lot of characters, a lot of followers, I mean, a lot of viewers, and by them focusing on J.J. more, it became more of a Three Stooges type movie than a socially conscious show that it had once been. So killing James actually killed the show.
Wow. Now the show did go on, though, for a little while.
Oh, absolutely. It went on. It went on, yes.
But you're saying, Eric Monty is saying that the level of quality and what was the initial, the impetus behind it certainly kind of waned after they killed off the James character.
Right, because James gave it that strong father figure role, and he did, you know, like punishing the kids and all that kind of stuff. And once that was good, good values to teach the viewers. And with him gone, it became more of a comedy. They made points every now and then, but it became more of a sit down and laugh instead of a learning experience that it used to be. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I was an avid watcher, of course, like many of you guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, after James had died, I had every week, I just hoped that he would come back through the door and say, because James had gone off to that pipeline, to work on the pipeline, I think, in somewhere out on the West Coast, somewhere Pacific West, somewhere. And I said, gee, wouldn't it be great, because maybe he could say, Florida, I'm back. I really wasn't
back,
dead
baby.
And something.
All right.
Yeah, baby, I'm back. Well, that was another show. That was another show. But the whole idea behind that, and when they brought in Carl, I knew that was it for James.
They have moved on.
And he was the antithesis of the James character.
Up
he was
James.
Not the street. Yeah, James just had, you know, a look. He could just, the whole look, you know, was so strong and menacing that you stay
strong,
in line.
A strong black male role model. He was, you know, actually, for a lot of people growing up that didn't have fathers at home, because there's a lot of single parents growing up in that time, he was a lot of people's surrogate father. Actually.
Right, exactly.
And people learned a lot from James for those that didn't
have
fathers at home. So
I totally concur.
Yes,
very, very good. And speaking of his great characters, now, I have to tell you, I absolutely love the character of George Jefferson, too. And I know you may have not just outright asked him about George, but I love Sherman Hemsley. He was, you know, from my home in Philadelphia. I got a chance to sit right next to him at the Arsenio Hall show. So I've great memories of this man and the character that he brought in when he was finally introduced on the All in the Family show.
Okay.
Because I know that Lionel was the first character who was introduced of the Jeffersons,
right.
And they kind of worked them all in and
yes.
all of that. So talking a little bit about that, that was very interesting. And then in 1975, The Great Cooley High was released in the movie theaters and received rave reviews. So, you know, and I believe it was even had been ranked by Entertainment Weekly as one of the best high school movies of all time.
Of all times, yes, yes, yes.
So
that was
tell
a good...
us, absolutely, what did Eric Monte share about his experiences of writing Cooley High? Tell us about that.
Yes. Okay, with Cooley High, he went on, he really wanted to show that that is an actual life story of his, too. That's him in high school. That's him. That's his life in high school.
Which character was based on him?
Preach, the black one with the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that's based on him. JJ is him on Good Times. And Raj is him on What's Happening. So if you notice, they're all
he
seeing
him. He always wrote from his...
experience.
Always. Wow. Okay, wow. Very interesting. Okay.
Now, with the success of his film, Cooley High, behind him, he wanted to develop a TV version of that. And that's what Happening is. What's Happening, he developed that for ABC. Now, ABC's ethics and acceptance of black manhood was just as short-sighted, as it was on CBS when he was trying to promote James with the station. They weren't really following that. Now, according to sources, ABC would not greenlight the adaptation of Cooley High unless the character of the handsome Cochise was replaced. Now, reports say that ABC did not want young white girls swooning over a young, handsome black kid. Now, ironically, however, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, that's the one who played him, played Cochise in the movie, he wound up as a sweat hog on ABC's hit show, Welcome Back, Carter. What's Happening became the first African-American teen sitcom to break into the Nielsen ratings, and that's quite an accomplishment. But as always, they had a fight.
It certainly was. Wow.
They had a fight.
Well, I do want to jump in and say that with regards to, you know, the allegations about the, you know, whether ABC and how they felt about the, you know, having a young, attractive African-American male, you know, kind of leading the show. You know, there have been some conversations we've heard on our show and out there in the public. But again, we want to remind everybody, now this is your interview, Mr. Pierre-André Evans, with Mr. Eric Monte. Eric Monte, again, who is the famed writer and creator of many of these, of television history with these sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
So we're excited to have his own words being, you know, shared with us today. And
these
again,
are
this
views.
Is all,
these
are his views and
yeah.
his words. And okay. again, the article can be found on online at soultrain.com. So, and written by our very own Mr. Pierre-André Evans, and we're so excited
right.
to have you with us. So,
pleasure to be here.
So now we're talking, and he went on, Lawrence Hilton Jacob went on to great success, so we don't have to
exactly.
feel badly about that for him. He went on to great success in doing that and some other things along the way. The Jeffersons, as I indicated earlier, just kind of went on and lived on and took on. Every one of these shows had been a hit,
all
had
of,
become a hit.
Yeah.
Every one of them had become a hit.
And a lot of them
hit.
Are still playing back-to-back. They have marathons, you know, a Good Times marathon, a Jeffersons marathon. What's happened that to this day? They still have marathons of his show. They have never went off the air from the day that they were created.
Now tell us, what has Eric been up to since he left or since the show stopped major production? What did he do in those in-between years? Did he share any of that about his own personal journey?
His own personal journey, yes. He had a lot going on. And are you referring to after the shows?
After the success of the shows, correct. What
okay.
happened after that?
Okay.
Like after they went off the air and stuff, you know, in terms
okay.
of the first run shows.
He ran into a legal situation. Would you like for me to touch on that area?
Well, just go ahead and share. I mean, this is
okay.
All, you know, it's out
okay.
there.
Well, yeah. Well, unfortunately for Eric Monty, he had a lack of business knowledge and experience, as well as legal representation, which resulted in him losing ownership rights to most of his creations, as well as the financial benefits that go along with them. He didn't have contracts signed. He claimed his TV ideas were stolen from him in the 1970s, and in around 1977, he filed a lawsuit against Norman Lear, CBS, and ABC. And in 1974, he got the contract to write Cooley High. Now, when AIP, that's the people that organized the cast and crew, when they sent the cast to Chicago to shoot the movie, Eric quit Norman's company. And the following year, he came out with the Jeffersons. Now, Monty claimed that they stole his idea for All in the Family, the Jeffersons, Good Times, and What's Happening. Now, he sued them, but after winning the lawsuit, he was blacklisted in Hollywood, and he had been blacklisted all the way up until the present day. Now, as soon as he filed that suit, all of his offers that he had on the table for different productions dried up. Nobody in Hollywood would talk to him. He was blacklisted, and in 79, both of his shows that he created with Mike Evans ended. That's a Good Time Band, What's Happening. Now, Mike Evans went back to his role as Lionel Jefferson, and Monty made a spinoff of the successful show, What's Happening. And if you remember that, that was What's Happening Now. The spinoff ran until around 1988, but Monty then had spent most of the settlement money on a production of his original play that we've never seen called If They Ever Come Back. The outcome of the play was a commercial failure. And going through all of that sent Monty into a downward spiral. This was in around 79, around 79, in the early 80s is when he really went into a downward spiral. And he fell on hard times, and he was even homeless. And he's quoted as saying, "My living in the streets and the shelters and me being broke, I see that as a minor inconvenience." He said, "Life is way too short for me to let some idiotic thing like that make me unhappy." He said he's not sad about anything, and he said he's happier. he just said he's happy, and he said his work isn't over. Now, what the settlement actually was, he received $1 million and 1% of royalties on the DVD sales of Good Times. That's all that he received, and he hasn't got anything since that. But they gave him $1 million, gave him 1% on just the DVD sales of Good Times, and told him to be on your way, and you'll never work again. But like I said, when I was telling you about that play, If They Ever Come Back, he used all of that $1 million to promote his play. Nobody came to see it. So that's what sent him into depression, homelessness, bankruptcy. And he was just on the streets out in California and in Atlanta. And that's a sad story, but he pulled himself back up. That's rough.
He pulled himself back out and back up, and we want folks to know. And it was important that we got it out there that, yeah. You know, after having such amazing success, and we're not talking about on a little scale, we're talking about amazing success with creating television history, you know, and not being business savvy, and not, you know, and being happy to have a few dollars in your pocket and notoriety, you know, it can happen to, not only could it happen, but it has happened to many folks from our community who embarked upon careers in entertainment.
We were taking advantage of because of our lack of knowledge.
Okay, so we want to make sure that, again, just to remind the folks that this is all based on a wonderful profile that was done by our very special guest, Mr. Pierre-André Evans, who's with us right now, and you hear his voice along with mine, talking about this wonderful tribute to Mr. Eric Monty, the creator of so many wonderful comedy shows that we know, and the great Cooley High movie. Now, yes. What is Eric working on today? What is Eric working on today? And can you bring us up to speed on how is Eric doing health-wise and so forth?
Yeah. Well, right now, he's authored two books. He has a book called Blueprints for Peace, and he has another book entitled A Prophet Ran Away. And he's trying to branch out into writing, and he's also still producing new ventures. It's the anniversary of Cooley High this year, so some work's going on with that. And his health has had 7 or 8 strokes in the past 10 years. And I was just with him October, a couple of months ago. Oh, that was November. That was November. I was with him out in Vegas. I did a show out in Vegas, and we did a tribute to him. And we asked him to come to Vegas so we could present him with a plaque for making an outstanding contribution to the black community. And prior to that, I've been in touch with him, and he wasn't really able to speak clearly. His speaking in his mind is coming clear. But out of his mouth, the connection between his brain and his vocal cords, it gets lost in translation. And in his head, he may want to say, "Hey, Pierre, how you doing?" And what will come out of his mouth would be, "Chicken, computer, brown, go." And then you have to learn his language, because being around him a long time, you'll know that computer may mean facts. Or a computer may mean this, you know what I mean? So he's created his own language. So the best way for him to communicate is either through text or through email. But with that being said, he blew my mind when he came to Vegas. And we presented it with him with the award, and we were on stage, and I handed him the mic. And he talked just as clear as I did. He's like, "Thank you so much. I'd like to thank you all. It was really great writing, good times. I'm glad I touched all of you all's heart. I'm humbled." And I'm looking at him like, these people, I just told the people in the audience that he just had 7 strokes and he can't talk. And he's talking clearer than I am. And that blew my mind. So afterwards, I said, "What happened?" I said, "It's a miracle." And he said, "No, Pierre, when I get real, real excited, then my words flow out." He said, "But just on a normal basis, I really can't communicate." And his famous line is, "I can't talk. I had a stroke." That's all he get out. That's wow. His famous line. He would tell everyone. But he's doing much better. He's happy. He's on his feet. He's happy. That's the main thing. He's happy. And that's his favorite slogan that he says, "Have a happy."
Well, it's that time to bring this episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it does not end here. The show continues over at our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network at www.hairradio.com. Now, I must thank today's great guests and our legacy advertisers. These are the folks who've been supporting our show over the years, including Dr. Raglan, Yolanda Raglan at fixyourfeet.com. They are the very best in foot care. She has 2 locations, one in New York City and the other in Maryland. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the amazing Troy Ballard, of course, from the West Coast out in Southern California. His company is called Smooth Black Ink. Now, he offers the very, very best in hair care for the entire family. He is a legendary hairstylist and educator. And also, he's a program host right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We just appreciate him again. That's Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Ink. Also, we are talking about a complete line of products for the guys now. It's that Rugged Evolution. Now, Rugged Evolution Beard Care is the actual name.